Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Debra and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Debra.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
Hello, Kelly.
How are you? I'm in my rain boots because it's raining.
Wait a minute. I didn't take a look at those.
But actually, they're snow boots. I had my rain boots on this morning, and then they were all wet, so I'm like, let me just switch over.
I love them. One of my clients came in with the cutest pair of, they're like Zookers or Cookers or something like that.
Hunters?
No, something else. I'm terrible with names, you know that. But I did write it down so that I wouldn't forget it. But they're so cute. They look like they would be like for like 5-year-olds.
That's so
with
cute.
Little patterns on them and
I love
stuff
how
like that.
People here get like all, you know, up in a hoopla about the rain. Like, it's just so funny. It's like, you know.
Must be dying laughing.
It is. It's really funny. And then People on the road, they're like holding the steering wheel really tight. Like, they're intense here.
But don't you think that our roads are not designed for a lot of water?
There's so much flooding by my house.
Yeah. I mean, it really is different. It's just unsafe. I'm sure that a lot of the drainage when you're on the east is different. And you get more snow than you get rain, or no?
Maybe about the same. But yeah,
because here you're hydroplaning. You know, you got somebody in the fast lane. They want to pass you. And there's tons of water, especially on the Ventura Freeway. It's awful.
I know.
Ugh.
Right. So,
but I didn't bail. I actually drove in. I came here. I was
that's
thinking
pretty
about
amazing.
This morning. I was thinking, oh, maybe I can do it from home. Nah, I'll come in.
Good for you. You're like officially an East Coaster now. You're braving it.
Have you seen the movie The Best Showman?
Yes, I saw
it. Fantastic.
You know what's funny?
You didn't love it.
I didn't love it. I thought it was good, and I liked it, but I thought it was a little bit too Pollyanna for me. Like, I felt like I needed more of, like...
Well, certainly Pollyanna for the real story, because Mr. Barnum apparently was not a very nice person.
That's what I'm saying.
So it was definitely fluffy.
Well, and
on
I could
that
tell
end.
That, though. Like, I felt like it was just, like, I needed more. Like, it just seemed too, like, oh, he was a great guy. Like, I don't know. It didn't feel authentic to me. So maybe that's why, but that's
interesting.
I'll
give you that, but I love the choreography, the dancing
and
the singing.
And then
the
show was cool, exactly.
And the characters.
And you know me with, like, animal cruelty, so that's part of it, too, is, like, my own personal thing about the using the elephants and all of that. So, you know, I have my own hang-ups. But the movie itself was neat with the visuals.
Did you see Pitch Perfect 3?
No.
Oh,
you
love it.
You saw it?
Oh, yes, I love it.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm, like, a Pitch Perfect, like, fanatic.
Oh my
I could
God.
Watch the whole
really?
I could now watch all three of them over and over and over again. Something about singing, because I don't know if you know that I was a closet singer when I was a kid. I wanted
I believe
to be
it.
A singer.
I believe it.
Either a dancer or a singer. It's what I always wanted to do.
Can you sing?
No.
Oh. I feel like you probably can. No?
I think with some lessons I probably could do okay. I did sing okay when I was younger. I was in the chorus and solos and all that kind of stuff, but something around puberty sort of did something.
But wait, before we move on to our last week's guest, I just want to say I started Black Mirror again. Did you ever watch Black Mirror?
Once or twice, I couldn't
it's
get
terrifying.
Into it.
It's
just too gross.
It's so, like, literally, the only way I can describe it, it's like a car accident. It's like you need to look, you don't feel good watching it, but you have to do it. And that's the only way I can describe the show. And it was so funny because I took a spin class this morning and the woman, like, I was waiting for David to pick me up and the woman's like, I'm sorry, you know, might be loud, I'm watching Black Mirror. And I was like, oh my God, please, we need to discuss. Like, when I find someone who watches it, like, I'm like, oh, thank God, because it's like, you need to talk about it. So, anyway, that's my craziness.
Well, but I am back on the Fosters.
Oh, did it start up again?
No, I'm watching all the ones we didn't watch
Dude,
the last
you are
2 years.
So, oh my God. All right, well, then we can discuss that, too.
Yes, I still don't know why you're so in love with Brandon, but
I
you
know.
Are.
No, I think it passed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who's your latest crush?
Let me think. Who is my latest one? Oh, my God. Oh. Let me tell you. I saw this movie. It was called, I'm going to forget the name. Something about, like, you don't call me by my name. That's what it's called. And there was an actor in there. He was in The Social Network. And I'm not into blondes, but he's light-haired and just beyond. Look him up. His name is... damn it, I don't care about his name, to be honest with you. I just care about his look. So just look him up. He's on The Social Network. And this new movie called Call Me My Name, he is perfection. Ridiculous.
All right.
It's an interesting movie, too. Anyway.
But that's beside the point.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Who cares?
And the boys, are they all healthy now?
No more. Everything's okay, vomiting? Thank God. But everybody I know got sick. I think there's not one person I know who hasn't gotten sick.
Either the stomach flu or the head
cold. Or the head cold.
Yeah,
something.
One or the other.
Yeah.
Ugh, ugh. Well, I'm so glad I'm better. And no bloody noses now for 5 days.
Thank God.
Yeah. It's a miracle.
Unbelievable.
So the humidifier, the no blowing.
Yeah.
The nose laying off the cocaine. Just kidding.
That all helped.
That all helped.
Exactly. Ay, ay, ay. You know what's so funny? I was just thinking about blood. This is horrible, but I have to just share it. So there was a South Park episode where the guy says, he's talking about women's periods, and he's like, I don't know about you, but something that bleeds for 5 days and doesn't die scares me. It was, and I always think about
hysterical.
That. And that's
I love
you.
It.
You were more than 5 days.
All right, back to more serious
yes,
things.
Exactly. Yes.
Last week's guest was great, Mel
yes.
Schwartz. He's the author of The Possibility Principle, How Quantum Physics Can Improve the Way You Think, Live, and Love. And I loved it. It's about possibilities.
Yes.
Right? It's about not being fixated on the fear of uncertainty, but allowing mm-hmm. uncertainty to just be. And it was really cool.
I like he said. Yeah, I like what he said. He said you have to ride the uncertainty wave, something along
yeah.
those lines.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that. And so true. And I think once people recognize that yeah, life is going to be uncertain, there's just sort of a relief in that because you're not so, you know, fixated or holding so fast to this outcome. So yeah, really interesting.
Well, today we have the pleasure of having an in-studio guest,
cool.
which is always awesome. And we have today Dr. Sherry Steins, who has an MBA, a PsyD, a CATC/V, I have to find out what that is.
Yeah. Substance abuse.
Okay. Oh, that's one of those. Okay. In a recovery expert specializing in personality disorders, complex trauma, and helping people overcome damage caused to their lives by addictions, abuse, trauma, and dysfunctional relationships. Sherry is the author of Narcissistic Relationship Survival Guide and also writes a blog entitled The Recovery Expert, which can be found at psychcentral.com. Welcome, Dr. Stein. So can we call you Sherry?
Yes.
Okay, great. Wow. Okay, so tell us what the initial CATC-V is, because I've heard of the CADAC, but...
That's what it is.
Okay.
Oh, it's the same thing?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a
yeah.
level 5 because I have a doctorate, so that's what that means, yeah.
How much extra schooling is involved in that?
Well, you have to get a PhD.
No, but once you get that...
So it's a level 4 if you have a master's degree. It's a level 2 with a bachelor's.
So you actually automatically get that if you wanted it?
Well, you apply for it.
Oh, okay.
So I work with addicts, too. So I'm a substance abuse counselor, too.
Okay, awesome. All right.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Wow. All right. Well, let's just start off with our burning question, because I know Kelly and I, as therapists, we sometimes throw out words like personality disorder and such on the air, but we've never really sat and actually defined what that is, because yep. a lot of people just think that means you have a bad personality, which isn't at all what
right.
it is. I mean, you might, but that's not the definition. So maybe you could enlighten us.
What a narcissist is, or with...
Well, how about just define a
personality
disorder, and then maybe get into the other ones.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about just in general personality disorders. They're on a continuum, so they kind of overlap each other. And the main markers for what I've noticed for personality disorders are, it's kind of like they have no insight that they have a problem. It's a mental illness, but it's identified in the way they relate in their interpersonal relationships. They can have very workable, superficial relationships, but when they get into their more intimate relationships, like with their close family members, spouses, children, that's when you can start noticing that something is amiss. They have a problem connecting in a healthy way. They don't know how to attach and attune with people they love. In fact, the closer they are to you, the more complicated and dysfunctional the relationship is. There are many different labels. There are borderline personality disorder, there's it's antisocial personality disorder, narcissism. There's
paranoid.
Right, but didn't the DSM-5 kind of shrink them down a few? There's only 5 now, but I know that, yeah, there's obsessive compulsive personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And there used to be like 13.
Yeah. No, dependent's still there.
I can't remember them all, but I just look at it like whatever it is, it's affecting your personal relationships.
Mm-hmm. And you can have a cluster, because when I think back
yes.
on like my father, who mm-hmm. was survivor of Holocaust, had a very traumatic childhood, he had post-traumatic stress disorder, but in addition, definitely realms of narcissism and paranoid personality disorder.
Yes.
It was like no matter what he would ask of me, he would be well-intended, like, oh, you got a literary agent. Yeah. Well, be careful because they're going to want all your money.
Right.
Like, no, yeah. Dad, that's not the way a literary agent works. In fact, they only get money if you get paid. Oh, no, 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 no. And just convinced that he's always right about that. Always the dark side in people.
Right. I've met people like that. Mm-hmm. It is very difficult to communicate with them.
Yeah. I mean, an amazing man and just did amazing things for people. But just it was like experiencing a rigid set of our cluster of patterns and behaviors and how they responded to the world that made it them so sort of stubborn and difficult to penetrate.
Yeah, I think rigid's a good word, and I think you're right. I think they overlap. People will say, am I dealing with a narcissist? Am I dealing with a borderline? Mm-hmm. And I often wonder, well, maybe they have both.
Right.
Maybe they're dual diagnosed, and that's why I just think of it like a continuum. And I don't even know if it matters, because you're dealing with somebody with a personality disorder and it's going to affect you in some deep personal ways, and it's very painful and difficult to navigate those relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. So like in my practice, maybe in yours too, like I talk about ego syntonic versus ego dystonic, like when like the old classification of like normal neurotics, that we all have things that causes anxiety, aspects about ourselves that we don't necessarily like, we want to change, it's hard to change, but we're aware of them and they feel like they don't quite belong. With personality disorders, it seems like everybody else in the world can be bothered by them, but they don't see that they have a problem at all.
I know, it's kind of nice for them, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
Kind of a blessing.
Yes. My God. But it makes it extra frustrating if you're the person on the other end.
Yes, to say the least.
Yeah.
So now maybe it doesn't really matter in the sense of how frustrating a relationship can be with them, but can you give us a couple of key features that differentiate between what I call the triple crown cluster of the narcissist, the borderline, and the antisocial?
Well, I'm going to say what comes to my mind right off the bat would be narcissists seem to be... They seem to really need to have adulation and admiration, and they seem to need to be fed narcissistic food or narcissistic supply. They really care about what other people think about them. They use the people in their lives as objects to meet their needs in sort of a barter type system. And I think they all kind of do in a way, but that's just what I've noticed most about narcissists. Borderlines, in general, seem to be nicer. They seem to be, they're more afraid of abandonment, so they really want you there. They always want you there, and they're like very threatened when you're not around. But the problem with borderlines is they often will replace you really easily, and they're very manipulative, and they are very seductive. And then the antisocial seems to not really care much about anybody and doesn't seem to need as much narcissistic supply. They seem to be more completely devoid of empathy and completely, like, they don't really need people at all, but they use them for some kind of control and power need. You know, they aren't really maybe safe to be around, or they're kind of cold and icy like a shark. I don't know if that describes the distinguishes between the three different...
Yeah. Well, Kelly knows. I was in a relationship for 7 years with an antisocial that I didn't recognize was an antisocial until I was very embedded in the relationship. And then it was
really
scary, like literally scary. And when he realized that I realized, that's when it got really horrifying. And this guy tried to destroy my life, like my reputation, all my relationships with my family, told lies everywhere, stole $100,000 from me, and had no remorse at all. And I started to notice when I looked him in the eye, there was no one there.
Right.
Mm. For some reason, I was in such a vulnerable place when I met him that I didn't notice those things. He was so good at reading what my vulnerable spots were and like what I needed, which was somebody who was like an anchor and strong. He was a very big man and like a protector kind of thing. And he could provide all that. It was like, that's the mirror he reflected in front of me. And then I started to see really huge, big crevices in that, you know, this big voids of compassion and the way he responded to certain things. And then I was so sucked in that it was just awful. And every person in his past, he had some sort of lawsuit against. because he had felt that they had betrayed him. I don't even think that he felt betrayed. He just found a loophole in the system how he might be able to get money.
Wow.
So it was
terrifying.
Terrifying. Yeah. So totally that absence of remorse is a big one. Now, with borderlines, it seems to me that they also have, while they can be very attached and all that, when they feel slighted, then you get met with all of their rage and hostility, and that you're the worst piece of shit on the planet. You know, it's like, really? I just didn't call for one day. Like that abandonment crisis that sets in.
Can I please pause you? Because I have to tell you my borderline story.
Please.
I had a borderline client. And
that's scary.
Yes. Yes. Right then and there. Mm-hmm. And she told me that she was coming from somewhere, she had to go somewhere and then to come to my appointment. And so I said to her, she said, I'm worried about traffic. And I said, oh, do you know about the app Waze? Because, you know, you can avoid some traffic. And she said, oh, no, I don't know about it. Okay, I'll put that in, whatever. Okay, great. So she arrives in my office 15 minutes late. And she said, she comes in and she was furious. And she comes in and she said, I use the app and it's all your fault. It took me the wrong way. And she takes a pen out of her purse and throws it at me.
Wow.
Yeah. For real?
Yeah, swear to God.
You didn't tell me this story.
I didn't tell you that?
No.
Oh, and then the next week she threw a pillow. And that's when I like said, listen, you cannot be throwing objects at me. You know, we can talk about your anger, but yeah, it was absolutely terrifying.
How many more sessions did she stay?
She actually stayed. I could deal with her for some reason. Like, I don't know. There was some way I could just manage, but she stayed a while. She really did. I couldn't believe it.
Well, then she probably got better.
Yeah, I guess she did. I think she did. I mean, she did threaten to, like, call the board on me, I think, at one point.
That's what they do, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really scary because it's like you can see that they have these moments of normalcy and you're like, oh, okay. And then you kind of forget, you know, and you can get comfortable. And then it's like, oh gosh, I got to be careful.
Right.
Because one false move of that abandonment or that, you know, anger and rage. I mean, it's absolutely terrifying. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
I know.
I'm flooded with all these memories of different people in my life with these kinds of things. Now, somebody once said, if you get a narcissist in therapy, you've misdiagnosed. Have you heard that before? Because they don't tend to come and stay in therapy because they don't think anything's wrong with them.
Well, they get dragged in there by their
spouse.
Their partner, yes.
Partner. Uh-huh.
I've had a few.
Or court ordered.
Yes, I have a lot of those.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure people ask you all the time, like, oh, well, can you change a narcissist? Can you sit down with them and, you know, have a talk? And I would love to hear your thoughts.
Well, like what you were just sharing about your borderline client, this is my belief. So I look at it like they all have different personalities, but borderlines have about 15. Narcissists have about 4 or 5.
Oh, my God.
And sociopaths, I don't know, 1 or 2, but... So if you think about it as an attachment trauma from their childhood, that something went awry, that they didn't have something in their developmental processes did not get connected to properly, so that by the time they're an adult and they're in your office, you have this person that's fragmented. They have about however many different fragmented personas that they're presenting to you. Like the angry one is there. Really, it's there to protect them from some kind of vulnerability.
Yes.
So as a therapist, your job is to help identify the underlying hurt, the vulnerable inner child, the attachment trauma that had occurred. If it's pre-verbal, you may not know, but usually they have a very chaotic childhood. So as a therapist, I believe that you can treat people with a personality disorder if they'll hang in there with you, if they're willing to be vulnerable, which is always questionable, especially with narcissists and sociopaths.
Right.
Which, but with borderlines, I think yes. I think they're motivated. I think they do want to heal.
Yeah.
At least some of their personalities do. But
right, exactly.
Because they want the relationship, right?
They don't
recognize that they're the ones creating the difficulty in the relationship, and being able to mirror that for them in a way that feels kind to them is often the challenge, where they don't feel like you're criticizing them or putting them down.
Well, if you talk about their childhood abuse and you say, I think you've been abused as a child, and I think it's an emotional trauma for you, it's an attachment trauma, and that you can heal from this, let's identify some of the ways ways that you have developed these personalities to protect yourself, I don't think they're that threatened.
Yeah, no, that's a good way. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of more not seasoned therapists will misdiagnose, not understand that they're dealing with someone with complex trauma and personality disorder, and say something. I remember as a new therapist, I said some stupid things in an office. Once had this, one of my first private clients, she had this severe eating disorder, and I was an eating disorder specialist. So I was so excited that I was going to get to work with somebody who had resources, who was able to come twice a week. Well, what I didn't get was that she was also borderline. And so I wasn't treating the borderline. I wasn't even, I was just dealing with this person I thought that was there. We were going to work on this together. And I would get calls at 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm at the end of the Santa Monica Pier. I've got a bottle of tequila. I'm cutting myself with razor blades and I'm sewing myself up with fishing line. And if you call anybody to come get me, I'm going to jump off the thing. I'm like, oh, this is blackmail.
No,
this
is
just so I just and then I botched that up so badly because I didn't have the skill set to understand who was in front of me.
Yeah, I wouldn't call anybody. I wouldn't say you're a narcissist. I wouldn't give. I would never give anyone that label. I never.
In fact, that's a great question. So you wouldn't.
I would never ever. I don't label people with that label.
Okay.
My client asked me.
Really?
My client asked me. She did. She said I was looking things up. And I think I might be borderline. And she said that. She said, what do you think? And I was like, oh, no. Like, and I was like, you know, and I said the same thing. You know what? I don't like to label. Let's just work on, you know, what you're feeling or something like that. Because it's like, that could be so scary. You know, 1 minute she could be fine with it. And the next minute, I don't know. So I just didn't want to go there.
Right. I don't mind if people label themselves. Mm-hmm. But I'll just say, well, I don't even think it matters, the label. And the labels are man-made anyway, so it really is irrelevant to whatever it is that's causing you to have these different switches in emotion on a dime. You know, let's just figure it out. Let's just solve the problem rather than worry about the label. Because labels can kind of just... You get stuck with a label, and what's the point of that? It doesn't really serve any good purpose.
And that's what's so interesting, though, because, like, when people suffer from anxiety, they actually feel comforted to know, oh, I have an anxiety disorder, right? Or
that's
somebody has depression, oh, I have depression, that's what's asked. But for some reason, personality disorders have such a stigma that I think if people hear those labels, and yet that's... Now, I had a friend once who, like, you asked me, not a client, asked me, you know, I just read something about this, and it seems like it really rings true for me. And I said, well, you know, maybe so. And what's the components that actually appeal to you about this? Yeah, because you have emotional chaos internally. It's hard to feel stable. Your relationships are unstable. Okay, so let's just look at, why don't I steer you towards some resources that might help you as opposed to get you mired in the concept of the label. So I agree about labeling. But it can, I think, be somewhat helpful if somebody's open-minded to it and they don't have too much backlash in their history of knowing that the community might see that as something negative.
Well, narcissists, people tend to think narcissists are just arrogant assholes or something, you know? And it's like, I don't really, when I use the term narcissist, I'm not even thinking in that. I'm thinking, well, this person has an attachment disorder. They can't connect right. But I don't think the regular person thinks that way about that term.
They don't.
It isn't even useful for me to use it.
Right.
And with borderlines, it's like, I just want to deal with their abandonment. Like, how were you abandoned?
Yes.
Who abandoned you? And they and that's easy for them to say, well, because you can see it. Like, they're from what I understand, is when you're a therapist and they're trying to make you the, like, they're looking for that parent everywhere. And which is why they're so angry when you aren't, the ways didn't work properly. Yeah. Oh, you weren't a good parent.
Bad
parent.
Kelly.
So, yeah.
But I do have a question. So it is interesting. I agree borderline comes from that abandonment issues, but where does the narcissist come from? So you said, like, what are your thoughts around that?
You know what I've seen? So this is what I've observed. Parents with no empathy. Okay, so, and it does seem to be a little bit genetic.
Okay.
Seems to be, now I can't tell, is it because that's how, like, say it was your mom or your dad. Was that because they had no empathy and they didn't attach to you right? Or is there a genetic component and you inherited it? I don't I don't know. You know, and sometimes you can't even tell. But what I've observed, this is what I've seen, is that somebody will be neglected emotionally and they won't be given free agency as a child. The parent will say, do as I say, right? And they won't be allowed to have their voice. But then on another hand, the parent will kind of indulge the child, like, spoil them. Mm-hmm. So it seems to be like a combination of under not meeting emotional needs and then indulging in like
superficial things, yeah, toys or mm-hmm. entitlements.
Yeah. It seems to be a combination. I had one narcissistic client. Oh my goodness, his parents died in a traffic accident, and he was five, and they were abusive prior to that. Mm. I learned, and then his grandparents proceeded to spoil him for the rest of his life. He was had no conscience. Did not like one of his children, openly admitted. I mean, mm-hmm. I did not know how to deal with this guy, yeah. but it was an interesting uh-huh. juxtaposition of his attachment styles between the parents, the abuse, the death, and then this being spoiled. Mm-hmm. It seemed right. to create something. So, mm-hmm. and I've noticed that with other people too, mm-hmm. like their parents would abuse them emotionally or even physically, and then they were allowed to do whatever they wanted as teenagers, so it was just, and then they grew up with this sort of entitlement attitude and an mm-hmm. inability to really relate in a healthy way, mm-hmm. and having no empathy or very little empathy or only having empathy when it served them.
Right.
Or using their empathy to hurt their partners, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like they would right. know how you feel just so they could screw you over with your yeah. biggest weakness, yeah. right?
Like technical yeah. empathy, not genuine empathy. Mm. It's like knowing how to manufacture the right words to appear as if
is it called
care.
Cold empathy?
Cold empathy? I don't know. I can just call it technical
I've heard,
empathy.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. yeah. But yeah, like, yeah, they kind of get your feeling.
Right.
And they can even tell you how you feel, and they can mm-hmm. even use it when it serves them. Mm-hmm. But they don't really care about your feelings.
Right. One thing that I've encountered, I'd like your thoughts on this and yours too, Kelly, is that sometimes people with really severe post-traumatic stress can also appear very narcissistic, because when you're in that high state of agitation and triggered by something that's going on, it's very hard to be empathetic toward the others around you, and you can have really
yes.
profound reactions that are very negative, that people look at you like, God, you're so self-absorbed, because mm-hmm. they don't recognize that you're really in the throes of some PTSD
yes.
kind of response.
Yes.
But so that makes sense, doesn't it? Because if
it
you think about it, mm-hmm. isn't narcissism sort of a PTSD from complex trauma?
That's what I'm wondering. It sounds
yeah.
like, you know, they can be very similar.
Because what it, okay, if you look at narcissism as a defense mechanism from vulnerability, well, if you're having PTSD, you were unable to protect yourself from some kind of trauma, whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me that the defense mechanisms would be, yeah. I mean, human beings have only so many defense mechanisms, right?
Right.
Like the grandiosity is just an overcompensatory type of mm-hmm. defense mechanism to no one will, I'll never be vulnerable, right? So yeah, I could mm-hmm. see. And then they also, okay, it's been observed like people that have the attachment trauma, so you have complex trauma PTSD as mm-hmm. an adult, can be triggered, like their narcissistic behaviors can be triggered by an adult trauma, mm-hmm. like going to a war, like being mm-hmm. like a lot of people who I've met as clients that were in like Iraq or something mm-hmm. that were abused as children, like once they got out of the war situation, they were in the modes that were compensatory way more than in just the normal safe modes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Does that
yeah.
sound clear?
Mm-hmm.
So there, it's definitely trauma related what I can see.
But a lot of people feel like it's narcissist has to do with low self-esteem. They're just trying to mask low self-esteem. I'm curious what you guys think about that.
That seems way too superficial to
mm-hmm.
me.
But I think a lot of people think that like, oh, you know, they're just being this way because really inside they're really insecure.
I think they're full of themselves.
Right.
I don't think they're insecure.
Right.
Not consciously, right? I think like some of the, it's the depth of that deep, dark shame place.
You're right. That's true.
That,
but that's different,
but that's
than low
different
self-esteem.
Than low self-esteem too.
Yeah. I think their yeah. victims get low self-esteem. If
yeah.
you ask me, if you've been around, you know, obviously
yeah.
you sound like you've had multiple
mm-hmm. yeah.
narcissists. Don't they attack your value?
A good trunk of experiences mm-hmm. with this cluster of.
And,
yes.
they attack your worth. They attack
yeah.
your self-esteem.
If you deviate on any level from being an extension of who they are and who they want you to be, it's like
really?
Annihilation. Actually,
how dare you?
At times.
How dare you
I remember when I decided to go to Cal State Northridge instead of UCLA. I left UC Santa Barbara because I loved the school so much. I was having way too much fun. I wasn't getting my classes, and I had always been a superstar student. And, like, I got my first C ever in college, in psychology, believe it or not.
Because you were having fun?
I was having so much fun. So it scared the crap out of me. So I came home and I said, because I knew I wanted to go to graduate school. It wasn't like I was just doing undergraduate and floundering. I knew from 12 on that I was going to be a psychologist. So I came home and I announced to my parents that I was going to transfer schools and I was going to go to Cal State Northridge instead of UCLA. Mm-hmm. My mother laid into me, you're going to be a despicable embarrassment to this family. Like, Mom, you never even finished high school. I mean, my dad had a fifth grade Polish education. I should be so proud of me. Wow. You know, she said, no, you're going to UCLA. You were already out of UC. And I'm like, no. And I actually had to have my mother talk to the dean at Cal State Northridge so that she could understand that I would get a better education there because I would get my classes.
Uh-huh.
And then my punishment was I had to finish my undergraduate in a total of 3 years. So since I chose, I was like, really? Really?
Oh, my God.
That's weird.
Yeah. But it was, you know, and you know, my mom had a terrible childhood, just a terrible childhood.
So she was projecting her needs onto you.
Yeah.
Like you needed to make up for her lack of education or something and make her feel like she'd accomplished something.
Yeah,
or
something like that. And when I would make a mistake, my mother would say, how could you do that to me?
Like, right.
What?
Really?
Yeah. What did you
That's
have
such
to
a
do
narcissist
with
statement.
That
isn't
is.
It?
Yeah. So, yeah, I've definitely had my share of them. I just wish I could have better radar because it seems like I'm so sensitive and so easily engaged with, you know, people who are con jobs to some degree.
Well, I think because you have so much compassion and you want to see the good in people.
I do.
And,
I do.
That's what I'm wondering. Yeah.
I'm the same way.
You are.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we get into this field, right?
Right. And from what I understand, those are the characterological disorders, right? Personality disorders. So it's the people with the quote-unquote bad character. They could only manipulate the gullible, the guileless ones, the ones that are... Because I always trust people. I always probably will.
Mm-hmm.
And then I always give, like, you're like, oh, you know, they had a rough childhood.
Right, exactly.
I feel sorry for them.
Yeah, sure.
You know, they had it. They don't mean to be this way.
Right, exactly.
Until they really screw you over, and then you finally learn, and you say, okay, enough, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So I would be really curious, I think our listeners would as well, about what if you end up married to a narcissist, and you have children with them, and you need to co-parent, because I would just imagine it would be a very big challenge. I know that it was when I was trying to co-parent the sociopath's daughter and my own and all that. Any ideas Tips? About what would make that? Let's say somebody chooses to stay with their husband, not leave them.
So if the husband's the narcissist and the wife's the non-narcissist, and they have children?
Yes.
So... Well, usually the non-narcissistic parent's going to do all the heavy lifting and do all the parenting, and then the narcissistic parent will kind of just be the detached object in the household that's kind of just present physically and may have some golden child or two that may need to do some kind of phenomenal things to make him feel good about himself. I've seen a lot of that. They usually will pick and choose their favorites.
Yeah.
They will not participate much in the parenting, probably, from what I've observed.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, what else? Anything specific you can think of?
I don't know if it turns out to be a more conflicted kind of experience, or you're saying...
It's not very healthy, because think about it. The parents are the role models to the children, and they're not having a healthy attachment, because usually when you're married to a narcissist, the narcissist is incapable of having a healthy marriage.
Mm.
So then you're role modeling kind of a dysfunctional... bond, and the narcissists usually are emotionally abusive. They usually do a lot of silent treatments. They're usually brooding. It's usually all about them. I liken it to they're the sun, and the whole rest of the family's the planets, including the wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone's supposed to just make the narcissist look good. And
well, that was going to be my next question. If you are co-parenting, is it better to sort of... So I know, like, with borderline, sometimes it's like you don't know how volatile they're going to be, so you just... It's kind of like just trying to keep it even, you know, just trying to keep it neutral. And is it the same with narcissist? I mean, when it comes to co-parenting, is it sort of like... kind of inflating the ego and just sort of, you know, yes, and doing all that so that you can kind of have some sort of, you know, a decent relationship.
You can't have a decent relationship with these people. It's really, really hard. When you're the parent who's not the narcissist, you have to parent alone, and then the narcissist or the borderline, I know some clients with borderline spouses, they are hit and miss. Like, they're there or they're not. They'll go to the thing they want to go to. They won't go to the thing they don't want to go to. It's just so random. People want to know. Oftentimes they want to get divorced. And I would just say, well, think it through, because oftentimes the borderline and narcissistic parent will fight for custody. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to send your kids off half the time to that other parent. Right. And I'm like, I don't know if you really want to do that. Maybe when they're teenagers and they can decide. Mm-hmm. But to have the kids be half the time with the non-parenting parent is a little scary to me. I wouldn't do it if it was my decision. Yeah, it is difficult. And then you're role modeling a working model for marriage in front of your kids. And it's kind of sad if you think about it.
Mm. Absolutely.
It is, yeah.
I thought of the other personality disorder, histrionic. We didn't talk about that.
Is that one gone?
No, it's still there.
Is it still there?
Yeah. I don't know if we want to talk about that too, but I find it fascinating as well.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so histrionics are extremely dramatic, seductive, exaggerators. I'm trying to think. I think it's some similarities with borderline too, I think.
I think you're
too.
Right. Yeah. I think of the Queen of Hearts in Alice in Wonderland. Uh-huh. Off with their heads, you know, she was just so extreme.
Yes.
Drama queens.
Drama queens, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly.
Drama kings. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's fascinating too.
But that is like a borderline.
What's the core behind the histrionic then? It's not the same as the abandonment.
No, it's not abandonment. I wonder what it is. Yeah. We'll have to look that up.
I don't think it's a much diagnosed personality disorder anymore. I mean, I don't know.
Right.
Do you?
Yeah. No, I don't hear about it that much either. I know it's still in the DSM, but yeah.
If you just tuned in, we're talking to Dr. Sherry Steins, who's a recovery expert specializing in personality disorders, complex trauma, and we're understanding that some of the differences and similarities among the different personality disorders. And yeah, why don't we touch a little bit on parent alienation syndrome, because that is common at times to the children who are raised by borderlines and narcissists.
Yes, I get questioned every single day. I get emails or phone calls, people asking me, what do I do? My child's mother or father is stealing my child away from me, and my child won't talk to me anymore. So that's basically what you're referring to as parental alienation. Can you help me? And that is very, very challenging. I think it was just yesterday, my children are estranged from me. They will not talk. They're adult children. Mm-hmm. What do I do? It is so complicated. Mm-hmm. And it has a lot to do with, I'm going to try this. Have you ever been familiar with a cult, like how a cult works? You know how a cult takes the child away from family and friends, mm-hmm. and they kind of indoctrinate them?
Yeah. Yes.
It's like a little mini brainwashing episode, sort of. Yes. So the example I just gave you, where you're co-parenting with a narcissist, right? And the narcissist is very detached from the children, right? Mm-hmm. So say you get divorced, and then all of a sudden, the narcissistic parent is being attentive to the children who they've neglected during their earlier childhood. So imagine how that child feels.
Right.
Oh, my
excited.
Goodness. A drink of water. I've been thirsty. Mm-hmm. I've been dying of thirst for all
Daddy's
these years.
Paying attention to me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So imagine how alluring that would be. Imagine how seductive that is. Imagine how when you're really securely attached to somebody, you aren't craving for that person.
Yeah.
But when that person's neglecting you, you're really craving for that person. Mm-hmm. So imagine how you could, if you were that narcissistic parent, kind of woo your children over into your little web.
Yeah.
And then another thing that happens while that's happening is the child has observed the rejection and devaluing of the non-narcissistic parent all these years, right? So they kind of internalize, oh, to be on this parent's good side, I need to reject the other parent. So there's this whole brainwashing that you don't even know. It's all under the radar going on, and it's like a dynamic, and it's very convoluted. My advice to the non-narcissistic parent is to be strong and hold on to your kids, and do not let yourself be weak and manipulated by it. Like, you need to really work at being a parent. Don't just, a lot of parents just give up and become one of the kids themselves. I can't do anything. My kids won't talk to me. It's like, you need to work on it. I would be the alpha. I would just be the alpha parent. And that's
maintain a front presence. Your self-value and your importance in their lives, and continue to drive that home even though you're getting all that resistance.
There's a lot of ways you can do that too. You have to be really clever. You have to really, really take care of yourself. Self-care is important. You have to be very healthy emotionally. You have to surround yourself with healthy people that love you and respect you. You have to show your children that you are loved and respected by people. There are many things you can do to counteract it, but a lot of parents, they'll call me and they'll want me to do therapy on their kids. Like, I can't fix the kids, but I can work with you and help you attach to your kids in a way that's going to make them not, or at least give it your best shot. I mean, don't just roll over. A lot of parents just they just throw their hands up and say, there's nothing I can do, they won't talk to me. And
what about, like, getting a psychological evaluation for your partner, and then it comes back, and yes, they are narcissists. Do the courts look at that and say, okay, we have a personality disorder, we got to factor that in?
I have never. People want that.
Yeah.
I've never heard of it working or happening.
Oh, really?
Ever. Mm-hmm. Like, the legal system.
Up until I understood, don't even recognize parent alienation syndrome as even a thing.
Really?
Unless that's changed in the last 5 years. But I remember doing some of my continuing ed on that. That, you know, it's like a term that half the judges don't even know what it is.
It'll backfire. It won't work. It'll backfire on the non-narcissistic parent. And I've heard of that. Like,
wow.
Yeah.
And the worst ever is when somebody falsely accuses the other parent of having sexually abused their kids. Oh, I've heard of a couple of these situations, and they're just horrible. Horrifying.
I have a crazy story. I had a narcissist woman come in with her ex-husband. They wanted me to see their daughter, who they felt was having problems with the divorce. And I said, sure. You know, so I the girl seemed, you know, she was having a couple issues, but the thing I noticed was the parental alienation. And what happened was the mother was so upset with the father. The father was Orthodox, Jewish, and she was, like, had converted. But then, you know, basically, long story short is she was feeding bacon to her daughter, which is, like, bacon is, like,
the Jewish
religion.
Yeah.
Like, anything that was, like, going to, you know, hurt the father. And it was so crazy. And it was just, oh, my God, it was just such a mess. And it was like, yeah, I mean, and it was so sad because here he was saying, look, gosh, there's, you know, please help me. I you know, she's doing all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, it's really difficult when you're in that situation.
Yeah, because she's teaching the child you don't have to respect your father.
Exactly.
What he wants doesn't matter.
Exactly. And I remember, yeah, there was, like, another time she wanted to do something, some camp. And I said, okay, well, you know, sit down, you know, with your ex, and, you know, this should be a family conversation. And she just tells the daughter, and it was just like, you know, just, yeah, I mean, basically bending all the rules, and yeah, just really tough.
I have clients like that.
Oh.
I have court-ordered couples that can't get along.
Yes.
And I'm supposed to
help
them.
To help, it's so...
Can you imagine? How are you going to help them get along? Like, your story, there's, you have one parent completely, like, undermining any respect for the other one.
When it's like, and you know, no matter how many times, you know, I said, listen, it's not about you two, it's about, you know, your daughter, and you have to maintain a good relationship for her. So if you think about the anger, just think about your daughter and how you want, and it's like, it doesn't matter, you know,
it doesn't matter.
No, that revenge need is so
big.
Powerful. I'll tell you a funny story, because it's so long ago now I can laugh at it. But when I was dating the psychiatrist years ago, daughter was little, I separated from Tiffany's dad when she was just a baby, and for various reasons. And anyway, he's turned out to be a great dad, so it's so we won't go there.
Yeah.
But so I was dating this guy, and you know, I knew he was separated, and he'd been separated for a long time. I had no idea how fucking crazy his ex-wife was. She was a borderline times 100.
Oh.
And when she got wind of me, first of all, she perceived that I had had an affair with him, like while they were married, which was the farthest from the two. Then, well, I missed out on a whole bunch of fun because
that wasn't happening.
She had three boys, and at one point, all she would be doing would be sabotaging every time that he was going to be able to see his kids. Oh, when the kids are sick, I can't get them. They're just constantly, constantly saying this and telling them that their dad didn't care about them anymore, and that's why he left, because he was really leaving them. And then we were going to pick them up and go do stuff with them from the house she was living in. And she comes out and moons me. This is an adult woman.
No.
My children are not getting in the car with you, and she pulls down her pants and moons me.
That's a great story.
This was not a pretty sight. I was like, whoa, I should probably run for the hills right now because this is going to be dangerous. And I swear to God, she systematically, completely sabotaged our relationship. There was just no chance in hell that we'd ever have a fighting chance, which is fine. It wouldn't have worked out anyway.
But still.
But it was like, wow, this is crazy shit. And I was so new in my career that I didn't really know all the ins and outs and the nuances of working with people like that. And guess what?
They don't teach about it.
She was in the mental health field.
Of course.
Of course.
Isn't that funny when that happens? I mean, it's like it is. It's just laughable.
Yeah.
I know I have a client that his woman beat herself up. Like, they'll do crazy things to get him in trouble. And other crazy things, like just over the top. And who would believe anyone? Who would believe that?
Right.
Like, nobody's going to believe. Oh, yeah, right. She beat herself up.
Well, of course.
All abusers say that, but...
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's just like your story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, you will not believe this, but we're just about out of time.
Yeah.
So we have a couple minutes. Is there something that we didn't cover that you want to enlighten our listeners about? It's fine.
I don't know.
Okay.
Is there anything you want me to cover?
Let's see.
Is there anything in particular?
In the meantime, while we're thinking, can you tell everybody where they can find your book
your
website and all that stuff?
So I have two websites. I work as a therapist in California in La Habra, and it's at lifelinecounselingservices.org. And then I do coaching across the United States and around the world, actually, at therecoveryexpert.com is how you can reach me.
Okay, yeah, that's how I found you, actually.
Okay. That's great.
Yeah. Okay. And the book is The Narcissist Relationship Survival Guide. And is it a PDF?
No, I don't know. It's just an ebook.
It's an ebook.
It's on And then I'm working on one, how to co-parent with a narcissist, and I'm working on one on trauma bonding or healing from trauma bonding, and also the child of a narcissist, but they're all in the works.
That's great.
Okay, So let's see, just final parting. What are a couple tips for, let's say somebody did grow up in a narcissistic home, you know, with one or both parents that way, and they're seeking some sort of, you know, they know that something was off in their childhood. They may not have had the labels, but they're really in distress. Therapy, any other kinds of things that they can do, like things that are really important, like self-soothing or...
Well, some of the things that I've noticed that happen to people when they grow up in a narcissistic home, and I'm sure you understand them, are they feel responsible for their parents' feelings. They feel really guilty a lot. They feel sad and ashamed that they're incapable of pleasing that parent. They never quite feel like they were a good enough son or daughter. Like, just, they never quite measured up. Somehow, like, Susie measured up to her parents, but I just wasn't good enough. And I know that they just kind of intrinsically feel that way. I know that's very painful. You can't put your finger on it. They have extreme anxiety all the time, and they don't know why, because they're so afraid, you know, and they've been trained to walk on eggshells because they never know the mood of their parent. And it's just such a complex trauma that there's no one answer to how to solve the problem or heal. But I do know that this is what I've seen works, is start saying healthy things to yourself, like, I am enough, I'm good enough. You know, don't carry around that critical inner parent in your head, and also start doing some inner child work. Find a good therapist who understands how to help heal an inner child and heal some of the hurts that happened to you from maybe even pre-verbal stage of your development. Those are just some of the things.
You have some of those tools in your book, The Narcissist.
Oh, yeah, that was, that's a variety of, oh, and the one about parenting, or about growing, yes, the main one is find your voice, allow your voice, and find your value, and develop healthy connections with healthy people.
Beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Oh, my gosh, thank you so much.
Really
quick, awesome.
Next week we have Ira Israel, so I'm super excited because he is the author of How to Survive Your Childhood, Now That You're an Adult. Would be super interesting and a good
nice
follow-up. Exactly.
Great.
All right. Thank you
okay,
so much.
Love you all. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.